This is The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk to researchers and innovators about how to better feed the world. You're tuned in to a new episode of The Food Fix. I'm your host, Taylor Holterman. Thank you for being here. Today, I'm recording from Wageningen in the Netherlands during my last week of study abroad. If you guessed that from the last episode, congratulations. Well, in Europe, I haven't had a kitchen to make my own food. We've been eating out for nearly every meal, but I haven't gotten that sluggish feeling I get when I eat out too much in the US. I think that's because going out to eat here is typically to some little restaurant with homemade food, not to get a combo meal from a fast food place down the street. That sluggish feeling is the point I want to get across in this intro. The times when life gets too hectic and you've been surviving off of fast food, convenient processed snacks, and caffeine. Whatever your survival mode combination of junk food is, it brings you down after a while. You feel more tired, maybe bloated or dealing with a migraine, or maybe you just start to feel less happy. Our food can actually impact our mental health. A recent study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found young men who switched from a poor diet to a healthy Mediterranean diet saw improvements in their depression symptoms. And for some, it was improvement enough to go from being classified as having medium to severe depression symptoms to being classified as no longer depressed. Today, I'm joined by Jessica Bays to talk about it. She is the lead author of the study and a PhD candidate at the University of Technology, Sydney in Australia. She's studying nutritional psychology, which is the effects of food and diet on mental health. Thanks for being here, Jessica. Let's first cover some of the vocabulary. A poor diet can mean a lot of things depending on who you ask. What do you mean when you refer to a poor diet?
So I did some research previously looking at the diets of young men, and we found that they generally were pretty poor. So definitely not meeting the recommendations that's put out sort of by the government and other bodies suggesting, you know, our five serves of fruits and vegetables and those sorts of things. So we know that already that population generally has a very poor diet. It's high in junk food, high in processed food, high in sugary snacks and fizzy drinks and those sorts of things. And as part of the criteria for the trial, we were looking for people that had a poor baseline diet. All of them that wanted to join already did. So that didn't really exclude very many people at all. And we were also doing this trial during, you know, COVID. So people were doing a lot of comfort eating, spending a lot of time at home. So it wasn't hard to meet that criteria of having a poor diet.
And what's a Mediterranean diet?
So most people, when they think of the Mediterranean diet, they think of olive oil and fish, which are definitely two really, really important parts of it. But it's also really high in fruits and vegetables, legumes, so things like beans and lentils, and whole grains as well. And it's very low on those processed, packaged, convenience foods.
Let's jump right into the results, because I was amazed to see that the diet changes did improve symptoms of depression. How significant was the improvement?
Again, as part of the criteria for the trial, they needed to have a clinical diagnosis from their medical doctor. They also had to score medium to severe on a depression scale. And it's the most commonly used depression scale in research. It's called the Beck Depression Inventory. So they started off with quite bad symptoms to begin with. Now, obviously, some improved more than others, but all of the participants in the diet group did improve. And we ended up with, I think it was 36% in the diet group that ended up with a score that was so low, it was classified as no longer depressed, which was pretty amazing. That didn't happen to any of them in the control group.
Wow. Over 30% going from medium to severe depression symptoms to being classified as no longer depressed when they ate differently. That's absolutely mind-boggling. When I think about mental health treatments, food is not the first thing that comes to my mind. It's not even the second thing. But the more I think about it, I'm realizing how big of a part of life food is. I'm thinking along the lines of when I'm sick and I really want chicken noodle soup because my mom always made that, so it brings me comfort. And now the connection is making more sense. Can you explain why food has this significant effect on depression symptoms?
Absolutely. So this is my favorite topic, so I'll try not to ramble too much. So I think all of us anecdotally know that our food affects how we feel. And again, we did some previous research where we asked sort of this demographic if they notice that certain foods affect how they feel, if they make their symptoms better or worse. So most of us know that, say, after a night out drinking late night kebabs and Red Bull, we wake up feeling a bit not so great, both physically but mentally the next day. I always get anxiety if I've gone out the night before. So I think all of us have got kind of that experience of linking what we're eating to our mental health, even if it's the other way around. We're not feeling great, so we're craving certain foods, we're craving comfort, those sorts of things. But it's only recently been researched properly in this new field called nutritional psychiatry. And I'm just so excited about this field because we all eat every day. We can make decisions every day. It's something that can be really empowering, that we can take control of, that we can choose to support our mental health as well as our physical health when we choose what to eat. So there's a number of different ways that we think food affects our mood. One of them is to do with inflammation. So we've known for years that mental health conditions are associated with increased inflammation in the body. And we know that food can reduce inflammation. So the Mediterranean diet is the anti-inflammatory diet. So all of that olive oil, fish, these are all things that reduce inflammation. That's why it's so good for heart disease and other inflammatory physical conditions. And we're now realizing that these mental health conditions are also inflammatory conditions, and that an anti-inflammatory diet can help that way. So that's just one of the mechanisms. The other one is to do with fiber and the microbiome. So when most people think of depression, they think serotonin or chemical imbalance in the brain. I've heard a lot of people say that to me. So serotonin is a neurotransmitter that makes us feel good. 90% of our serotonin is made in our gut by our gut bacteria, our microbiome, so the bugs that live in our gut. So if we feed them the food that they need to be healthy and do their job properly, they can make that serotonin. So we have most of our brain cells are in our brain, but we have one brain cell called the vagus nerve, cranial nerve number 10, and it wraps down our body like a tree, and it touches all of our internal organs. So it touches our heart and our lungs and our digestive tract. And the messengers made by these gut bacteria, the serotonin, can communicate directly by this nerve to the brain. So there's sort of a highway of communication. So that's just two of, I think, about 10 different ways. So there's a lot.
I had no idea so much of our serotonin was produced in the gut. To keep talking about the gut, I have experience with diet change through dietary restrictions. One of them is a pretty severe lactose intolerance. So I've essentially completely cut out dairy from my life. Back when I first made that transition in high school, alternatives like cashew milk and vegan cheese weren't as popular as they are now. And it was really hard for me to cut things like ice cream and cheese out of my life, even though it caused me physical pain. Is it also difficult to make a diet change like the one in your research?
Diet change is so hard, regardless of what type of diet. Obviously, some diets are more restrictive and difficult. The thing that I love about the Mediterranean diet is that it's sensible, healthy eating. It's not crazy. We don't have to weigh our food, count our calories, check for ketones in our urine or anything wacky and crazy. It is a very sensible, healthy, moderate diet that is flexible. So it can really easily fit in with people's diets. And as a nutritionist, I'm always talking to people about, well, what do you like to eat for breakfast? How can we tweak it? How can we make some small changes? Because it's those small little steps that add up to a big change, rather than trying to go from 0 to 100 straight away.
This might seem like an obvious question, but I have a feeling it's a bit more nuanced than it comes off. Why is all of this important?
For a number of different reasons. It's important to me personally. I have sort of personal history with mental health and those sorts of things. And it's something I see in my clinical practice as a nutritionist a lot. But it's really important for the demographic that we looked at, for young men. So we know that young men are the least likely to seek help for their mental health. And we know that there is a bit of a crisis at the moment with rates of suicide. It's the leading cause of death in young people. So it's a real problem. And particularly in a post-COVID world, mental health is more important than ever. So we really need new evidence-based treatment options which appeal to young people and to men in particular, because men are less likely to seek help. They're less likely to want to go to talking therapy, psychology, those sorts of things. And young people tend to be a bit more cautious about taking things like antidepressants. So diet could be a really powerful first step towards treatment, towards recovery for young people. So I think it's a really important area of research.
I, for one, am excited about the potential of this work. I agree that it's very important. So what's the next step? Is there potential for this method to spread and eventually be used?
We, after this project, we want to look more into different barriers that might be there for people adopting diet. You know, what's standing in their way for them adopting this long term? We still need studies that look at the long term effects. You know, do these positive results, do they plateau over time, or can they maintain those positive benefits that they get? And then sort of reproducing this sort of study in other locations. You know, does this just work specifically in Australia, or can this be applied to other countries, other population groups, those sorts of things? But we've had such a good reaction to this, and I've had so many researchers go, oh my god, you know, I've got this new idea for this new study, and I think it's really going to snowball from here, which is just so exciting. I think we're really just at the cusp of what's going to start happening.
That's all I have to discuss with you today, Jessica. Thank you for joining me on this episode. For anyone interested in learning more, the study is linked in the episode description.
Thank you for having me.
With that, we've reached the end of another Food Fix episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We release a new episode every Tuesday at 5 a.m. We've also reached the end of my time studying abroad. The next time you hear me, I'll be back in the United States and hopefully cooking my own food again. You can join me right back here for the next episode on Tuesday, July 5th, if you're interested in hearing more. Until then, you can follow us and reach out on Facebook and Twitter at MSU Food Fix to join in on the conversation. This podcast is brought to you by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism, and I've been your host, Taylor Holterman. You've been listening to The Food Fix.